Hey everybody, it's Michelle. I am here to talk to you about our Patreon page. This is the page that you can go to help support our podcast with a monthly donation. When you commit to supporting us, you can get additional bonus content such as extra podcasts, our favorite playlists, our show notes, and eventually we would like to have merchandise to sell like t-shirts and baseball caps, and we would let you have first dibs at those. Of course, because we are coffee moms, we are offering membership levels that are as follows: the coffee membership, the cold brew membership, or the espresso membership. Now, no pressure whatsoever, but if you do love our podcast and you would like to help support it, you can go to patreon.com/messybunmamaspodcast. That is Patreon, patreon.com/messybunmamaspodcast. There you can choose a membership level that works for you. Melissa and I want to thank you in advance for your love and your support.
Messy Bun Mamas. I'm Joe.
I'm John.
I am Malcolm.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
This is Melissa.
Michelle.
And this is the Messy Bun Mamas podcast.
Here we are.
And today we are talking about
infertility.
Oh, it breaks my heart a little bit.
I was thinking, oh, this might be too rough, but I think I'm in a better place right now to.
Yeah.
I've got enough medication to temper out the upset.
I think it's always great for other moms to hear about struggles.
So yes.
I think it'll be good.
I agree.
It'll be rough, but it'll be good.
And I think we both have had some struggle, so
yeah.
It'll be nice to hear both of our stories. But first, let's talk about our mama moments. Tell me about your mama moment this week.
I'm really excited about mine. Okay, so at some point in the past, we talked about what do kids really hear? What do they listen to when you listen to music and watch movies or whatever? So the other day we were outside with the kids and Malcolm was like sitting on the ground. He was playing with chalk and he's just sitting there and he's singing Father's House.
Okay.
By Corey someone, I don't know.
Right.
Do you know what song I'm talking
yes.
about? It's like, ooh, lay your burdens down. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just sitting there like singing it and he was like getting into it. And I was just like, no, I mean, I would for sure rather him be singing Father's House than like, you know, Young, Wild, and Free like that other 4 year old.
I have thought about this a lot. And I was just like, I guess I'm just going to go back to I'd rather at 4 year old, 4 years old, him to maintain an innocence about himself.
Yeah. But it's just like, I mean, you know, there's this song by Elevation Worship that's called Rattle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about like chains breaking and rattling or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, they loved listening to that song in the car. We like blast it and we sing it. And mm-hmm. they'll be like, bye, can we listen to the Rattlesnake song? But it's just like, I mean, you know, we were driving down the road and there was a song by like Matthew West that came on and John was like, this is my favorite song. And it was just one of those, like all these moments together just really made me feel like, you know, obviously they're listening mm-hmm. to what I am playing. And I mean, I guess I would rather them listen to the songs about God and love and whatever than about, you know, the hose next door and getting drunk by the campfire. I guess.
So boring though. I'm just kidding, God. I'm just kidding.
Well, and like, I mean, I'm not gonna say that we only listen to like worship music, because that's not the truth at all. Like, I just came back from like a 4-day trip, and like I made a playlist for all the kids of like Christian rock and Christian rap and mm-hmm. Christian like R&B and what I mean, most of it was like throwback music from when I was a teenager. Right. But you know, because I want them to be exposed to music that isn't just worship music.
Yes.
Because if you expect a 12-year-old boy to sit around and listen to like Natalie Grand,
right?
I mean, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure.
Right. It's good to diversify.
Yeah. So that's my mama moment, is I felt good about what they've been listening to.
I love that mama moment. It's just kind of like a confirmation, like, right? Because at the end of that episode, we were like, we don't really know the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not going to sit outside in the summer and listen to country music, because that would be a lie.
Right.
Because I love country music when the sun is shining and it's hot outside. But I mean, you know.
But for the most part, you're going to
yeah.
do what you've been doing.
I so. Think
so, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I, like I said, upon reflection, I was just like, you know what? I don't know. I want my little boy to be a little boy, and right. for as long as I can keep him
that way. Right.
He's already man enough.
And by man enough, she means sassy. Sorry,
sassy. Sassy.
Yes.
So it's funny that that was your mama moment of the week, because my mama moment of the week was, I don't know if we've necessarily talked about it in our podcast, but I know that you and I have talked about it, about people that over apologize.
Yeah.
She rolled her eyes.
I did.
And that is something that I have struggled with in my life, to learn to not apologize about everything. I mean, I still do it. I say I'm in recovery, but I'm really not. So one of the things that Joe has really been big about lately has been, he'll do something naughty and right away, I'm sorry. And I'm just like, you're not really sorry though. You're not sorry. You're just saying the words because you think that's what I want to hear. So I started saying back to him, I don't want you to be sorry. I want you to not do that. Mm-hmm. Or I don't want you to be sorry. I want you to listen to what I just said. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, oh my God, am I sending him a mixed message? Like, I do want him to apologize when he's done something wrong, but I don't want him to be apologizing just to apologize, because yeah. he thinks that's what people want to hear. So last night we were walking down the steps and he was saying to me, oh, and I can't remember specifically what it was that hurt him, but he said, oh, mama, I got hurt when I did this. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, Bubby. I'm sorry that you got hurt. He goes, no, mommy, I got hurt when I did this. And I said, I know, Bub, I heard you. I'm sorry that you got hurt. And he goes, no, mommy, you didn't hurt me. I hurt myself.
I want to clap.
Yes! Yes! I actually had to like stop. I paused and I turned around and I said, I get what you're saying, Bubby. And mommy really appreciates that. Mommy knows that how you got hurt really does hurt. And I don't want you to feel that pain. And that's why I said, I'm sorry that you're hurt. And he goes, okay. And he like keeps walking on. But I was just like you said, just like the confirmation of I am doing it right. My super mom pose.
It's true though, because like, what are you apologizing for?
Right.
I mean,
are you sorry? Are you really sorry?
But is that but the thing is even if you're sorry, like you don't like the fact that he's hurt, so you're saying you're sorry. Mm-hmm. But is that really letting him feel that you're upset that he's hurt?
Right. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's really just a way to, it's a cheap form of empathy. Right?
You guys can't, like, my head is like, I'm like aggressively nodding.
And so I was just like, I was so proud of myself in the moment last night. I was like, and him too. A little bit him, a lot me. But I was just like, oh my God, I really am conveying the correct message to
yeah.
him. And I'm not, it's not conflicted in his head. in any way, shape, or form. So that
good
was my
you, mama.
Hot about myself.
I hate over apologizing. It's like seriously one of my pet peeves. Like I will be in a group of adults and somebody will apologize. I'll be like, what are you sorry for? Did you hurt me? Is it your fault that the Starbucks line was too long? I'm not sure what you're apologizing for. And then everybody's like really awkwardly stammering over words and then they hate me and it's fine.
But I get it because now, and you pointed it out to me, like when we first started working together, you're like, why are you apologizing to me about that? And I'm like, because I don't know.
Because like, I'm just sticking words out into the air.
I feel like I have to say something. So like I said, I'm coming to realize that it is almost like a cheap form of empathy instead of just being like, hey, that sucks.
It helps the other person feel much more validated for you to be like, wow, that sucks. I would hate sitting in line in the Starbucks line for that long, rather than being like, oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
It's like you're blowing me off.
Right.
And I mean, you're not sorry.
Right.
Not only are you blowing me off, but you're lying. Why are you sorry?
Right. I know you're not really sorry because you still got your Starbucks and didn't have to wait for it.
Exactly. So I am so proud of you and
no,
Joe.
Thank you. All right. I'm just gonna smile through the whole rest of this episode despite all our heavy topic here. So to start off with, because we are talking about infertility, I do want to just give some facts about infertility. And thankfully enough, there are like some legit sources
right.
on this, and
because
there are a lot of opinion pieces, and I'm not saying that opinion pieces aren't valid, it's just their opinions.
Yeah.
Excuse me, my non-existent smoker scoff.
I love when you snort into the microphone. It makes my day.
I told my husband, I'm like, I don't know what it is. I think it's just because we record in the mornings. And so I still have that wake up phlegmy thing.
Yeah.
I'm really not a smoker. I just have a cough that you guys get to hear week to week. But there was the World Health Organization, the CDC.gov site. And then there was one that I did find. It was called singlecare.com, I think it was. But they talk about it. So some key facts: infertility can be for men and females. It's not just the ladies, but it's defined by failure to achieve pregnancy after 12 months of trying for a kid. Now, they do say, I did not know this, that if you're 35 and over, they actually say you're infertile after 6 months of trying. And that's because they want you to seek help sooner because you're geriatric at that point. And so the different, I don't know. So some people may be sensitive to some of the words that I'm about to say. So I'm just going to go ahead and say it because we're talking about infertility. So you're just going to hear some of them. Male infertility is most commonly caused. This is from the World Health Organization. It says infertility is most commonly caused by problems in the ejection of semen, absence or low levels of sperm, or abnormal shape and movement of the sperm. For females, infertility may be caused by a range of abnormalities, I can say the word, of the ovaries, uterus, fallopian tubes, and the endocrine system, amongst others. There was one of the other articles that I read also talks about, like, can be, it's not just the organs, but the things that impact the organs, like your hormones,
yep.
Infection, things like that. So, but one of the things that I did find interesting, where's my numbers here, is okay, so the CDC says that 6% of married women, so now this is just married women, this may not even be just single people that are trying to, 6% of them are considered to be and are having infertility issues.
I thought it would be higher.
So that's what I thought. I was like, whoa, but that's just in the US. Okay. So that's the CDC. And then, let me see if I can find it here. I should have highlighted it because it probably would have been more productive of me to highlight the information. There was one, maybe it was from the WHO.
Because, yeah, I mean, I guess if I'm just thinking off the top of my head, if I think of like the 10 or 15 women that I know that are either have kids or like were actively trying to get pregnant. So, okay, I guess infertility, are you just talking about trouble getting pregnant or trouble carrying?
They consider both.
Okay.
Infertility. Right. Okay. And I didn't realize that until I started to like actually like do some of the research that I did. They consider both of those infertility issues because it's your organs and your hormones and all of that stuff that cause that. Okay, here it is. This was actually from resolve.org. So I did want to do one other site, but it says 1 in 8 couples have trouble getting pregnant or sustaining a pregnancy. And that was from a survey from 2006 to 2010. But I wish I could find the one that talked about, it was something like worldwide. It was like 45 million couples struggle with infertility of some point.
Wow.
So if you expand it worldwide, like I said, you look at that and you think that's just couples, people that they consider to be married or in a relationship.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's
a lot of people.
And there's so many different reasons for it.
Yeah. And well, because if you really consider the fact that 45 million couples, that's 90 million people who are actively trying to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. So not just like, because when you say even 90 million people, you're like, there's 6 billion people on this world.
Right.
But like, there's 6 billion old people, children,
right,
like people who are not actively trying to get pregnant. That means 90 million people who are actively trying to get pregnant are struggling.
Right.
That's mind blowing to me.
It's very mind blowing. I just, so what, when I stepped up like the scale of just the US to like worldwide, I'm like, so this is kind of a bigger thing.
Well, because you always hear it's our food and it's like blah, 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 something that
selfish, greedy Americans.
Yeah. I always hear it's the hormones we give our cows. That's a common thing I always hear. It's the hormones in the meat.
It's all your fault. But then just before we really go into our conversation and everything, I just wanted to talk about like the possible treatments that they offer as well, because we'll discuss that as well. So you'll hear me refer to IUI, and that's an intrauterine insemination. And I want to explain this because I've actually, when I've gone to new doctors and I've said, well, I've done IUIs, that the doctors will say, what is that?
Well, that's
You're a doctor. Please tell me. So IUIs are like a step before IVF, and it's not where the woman will track when she is ovulating, and then you go into the doctor's office, they will collect a sample of semen from your husband, and then they like inject it into you. So just in case anybody's never heard of that, it's like a step before. And then of course there's medical treatments, like you can do like Clomid and things like that. Makes you really crazy.
I have a story about Clomid.
We'll get into that. But then there's several other treatments that are lumped under the acronym of ART. It's assisted reproductive technology. So that's IVF, ICSI, and then there's some older ones that they mentioned in here that they said are not used as often, like Zift and Gift. So
Zift and Gift.
A zygote intrafallopian transfer, or it's a tubal embryo transfer, which I'm sure you could understand why that may not be.
Man, my biology lesson really is needed in this conversation.
So I'll just read. The zygote intrafallopian transfer is similar to IVF. It occurs in the doctor's office or laboratory. Then the very young, so fertilization occurs in the lab. Then the very young embryo is transferred to the fallopian tube instead of the uterus.
Makes sense why that's not a good idea.
Right. The gamete intrafallopian transfer involves transferring eggs and sperm into the woman's fallopian tube. So as you can see, as I said, that's, you can understand why those would be nice.
In case anybody doesn't know, I mean, you know, ectopic pregnancies are...
are huge.
Yeah.
We'll talk about those as well. So.
That's why we're saying, like, obviously it's not a good idea. Right. And I just want to point out what we're obviously saying, about.
Just in case maybe you haven't gone through all of the infertility things and worries and stresses and fears.
Yep.
So that's a good clarification. Baby making in the fallopian tube is not,
it's not a viable pregnancy.
Right. So so those are some of the statistics. Is there anything that you wanted to add or anything that you can think of about?
I think that's not scholarly, no. I think that I think that once we go into the personal anecdotes, I'll have a little bit more, but
okay.
But all right, so let's take a breather and we'll be right back after this break.
Okay. Welcome back. So
we're gonna get into the thick of it.
So I just want to kind of talk a little bit about my journey.
Yes.
So I knew going into getting together with Dan and getting married that I had PCOS, mm-hmm. and that can be a factor in getting pregnant. Now, I had no idea how much of a factor that it made, but it did. We got married when I was 32 and he was 35, going to be 36 later in the year.
Okay, so just before we get into that, I just want to say that PCOS is polycystic ovary syndrome. It's a hormone disorder causing enlarged ovaries with small cysts on the outer edges. It's common in, basically the way it was explained to me is like, there's a list of 20 things, and if you have five of them, you have PCOS.
Right.
So it's not necessarily like, I don't know. It's for sure like more of a syndrome than a disease, I guess.
Yes.
So, all right. So you were 30 something.
No. And I'll even add to that, that one of the things that they, one of the symptoms that they say is big about that is like insulin resistance, which impacts your hormones in like a huge way.
Yep.
So I was 32, Dan was going on 36. So we knew we were older and we needed to get this done if we were
ASAP.
If we were going to have kids. And so we waited. We got married in 2008. Nothing happened. And it started to stress me out a little bit because, you know, nobody goes and asks the guys, hey, when you gonna have a baby? You know, the pressure is all on us. Right. 'Cause you know, it's all our responsibility. Right. And so it was hard. And then knowing too, you know, 'cause people, pro tip, don't say things like, you're not getting any younger to someone who's struggling to have children. We should say period. You shouldn't say it, period. But yes, so I would hear things like, well, you're not getting any younger. And so that was really kind of rough. January 2011, we found out that I was pregnant. But how we found out that I was pregnant was that I kept having intermittent bleeding. And I mentioned to my friend, which is not, wasn't a huge trigger in my head, because with PCOS, you can have...
You have irregular periods.
Very irregular periods. It wasn't a huge trigger in my head, but I was talking to a friend and I'm like, yeah, every other week I spot and bleed for a couple of days and then it stops. I said, and right now I'm pretty sure I'm going to kill my husband. I mean, and I like told her like some of this stuff that was going on, and really it was kind of, I don't know, it wasn't huge issues, but I was pretty sure. I mean, I really wanted to drown his head in some dirty toilet bowl water. I went 3 days without talking to him at one point in that period, just because I was like, and he came up and was like, oh, baby, I love you, you know, and I didn't mean it when I said, nope, get off me. And I'll tell you what he said to me is, we had been arguing about something and he said to me, just shut your mouth. I can't stand it. You never shut your mouth. And so.
So she like overcorrected. She's like, well, now all I'm going to do is shut my mouth. I've for sure done that before.
So I was telling her some of these things and she's like, man, do you think you could be pregnant? I'm like, I'm bleeding like every other week. And she's like, I really think you should go take a test. So I'm like, fine, I'll amuse you. I'll go take a stupid test. And so I took the test and it was positive, which I was like, oh my God. So I right away called the doctor and they had me come in for blood work to see what was going on. Cause I told her, I said, you know, I've been bleeding and da, 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 da. And so she's, well, we'll do this. Then, that was all on Monday and Tuesday. On Thursday, I had heard back from the doctor's office saying, hey, we're concerned with the HCG levels. You know, you are showing higher signs of pregnancy, but just because of the levels, the doctor thinks you may be miscarrying. So I was like, all right. At least I know I'm informed, right? So then they said...
The logical side of you.
Right. The ups and downs of hormones. So now it's all starting to click. Like, right? I wanted to kill my husband because my hormones were like... in overdrive. I did. And so, but she says, we want to get you in for a ultrasound so that we can take a look. So I went in the next day for the ultrasound. And I think this is what got me here, is the lab tech showed me pictures of like the heart beating and saying the baby shows growth, you know, the baby looks about 6 weeks along and everything. So I was like, oh, maybe this is all gonna turn out well anyway, after all, you know. So my heart like embraced that this was gonna be something viable. Well, the doctor's office called me later and says, well, the doctors really want you to prep for a miscarriage because it doesn't line up with the time, the size of the baby does not line up with the timing that you should be pregnant. And I was like, you're just a doctor, what do you know? So, you know, my heart was just already
in love with the baby.
And later that day I started to this is all within just a week. I started to feel like tense pains on the side on both sides. And I kept saying to Dan, I don't feel good. Something doesn't feel right. So we ran to the grocery store to get me food, because apparently that's how men solve problems. And at this point, I had started to bleed more. And I said to him later on in the evening, I said about 8-ish, I said, man, something's not right. I'm changing a pad every half hour.
And did he know what the doctor had said?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So he's like, oh, it's fine. Everything's okay. And he's just, he doesn't help. Yeah. He doesn't help my hopeful, wishful side of me. Cause he just like, if we just sweep all of our little problems under the rug, we never have to see them again. And so, and he's like busy cleaning and stuff. And I'm like starting to feel the dread. So I'm like sitting in the living room watching. And to this day, I still can't watch Despicable Me because I relate such bad feelings to it. And Joe loves that movie. But I was sitting there watching it, and it was a little later in the evening, I would say probably 9 or 10. Dan's like, I don't know why you always decide that you don't need to go to the ER until it's too late. But I was like, this is not right. I'm bleeding a whole, I mean, there was just a significant difference between just a regular monthly period and what was happening. So we went to the emergency room, and So they wanted me to take off like all my clothes and my underwear and everything so the doctor could examine me. And I had tried to put a call in to my doctor, my, what do we call those?
OBGYN.
OBGYN, thank you. My brain just went blank. And I had not gotten a response. So I went in. So that's why I went into the ER. And while I was in the little bathroom, I had taken off my underwear, and just like this huge clot fell out of me. And Melissa, I just broke down. Stood there and just wept. I mean, and Dan's like, oh my God, that's a whole lot of blood right there.
Thanks, Dan.
Right? He does not do well in stressful situations. Someday I'll tell you about my kidney stones hospital visit. But God bless him. He's just like, oh my God, that's a whole lot of blood. And the nurse is like, she's like, oh, honey, it's okay. You know, because I'm like sitting there just standing over it, sobbing my eyes out. And she's like, here, you go. You just go sit down on the bed. Just sit down. I'm going to clean. I mean, and she's like sitting there like champ of the world cleaning up this mess. And the whole time I'm sorry I made such a mess. You know, because my mind is all gone. So the doctor comes in, does the examination, and he's like, for sure we think that you're aborting your baby. And he goes, now wait.
Why do we use that word?
Why do we? And you know, because back then I said what I thought, and I was already emotionally traumatized at that point. And he's like, that's just the medical term for saying miscarriage. I'm like, well, why would you use that word? You can't change a medical term?
Bedside manner, people.
What are we in the 1800s? I mean, my God. So, I didn't say to my God, but I was just like, we're not in the 1800s, you know. I've chilled out a lot in my life. And so, and Dan's starting to get tense because I'm like talking smack to the doctor, right? And I'm just mad and furious because my body is defying me. I mean, you've already got this feeling, your body is defying you, and then you get this hope and glimmer of what you want, and your body's just like,
just kidding.
I put you through this to have some fun. And so I was a nutcase at that point. And we were over our youth group at that time, and we had a special youth-led service the next night. And Dan was just all ready to like nothing's happening. We're just going to go on with her. We're going to pretend like nothing is happening. And then then Sunday morning was when like the actual evidence of the miscarriage happened, but we were at church and I had gone to the bathroom and I came out and I was like trying so hard not to cry. And Dan sees me and he's like, "It's all right." So men, if you're listening to this, don't try to soothe over your wife's emotions and tell her to not have emotions. So after that, we found out the night that I went into the ER that my OBGYN, the reason why she had not responded was that she had been going to a birth and a drunk driver came down the wrong side of the road and hit her. And she's made it. She's alive. She's well. Dr. Duffy, I just wanted to say that I miss you terribly. But top that on top of all the emotions of what's going on. So the ER doctor said, "Hey, we know this is the situation with this doctor. I've got this doctor lined up here for you. I'll put in notes and everything that you're going to give them a call on Monday. We just want you to follow up with her. She's really excellent." So the ER doctor did make up for telling me that that my body was aborting my baby. Melissa's shaking her head. And I really do. I struggle with this. It's if you know that this is an upsetting term to people, why would you not just use the not medical term?
Right.
So Monday morning, Monday afternoon.
I just feel like aborted almost like it automatically implies to a person like unwanted.
Right.
So like, I don't understand, like if a mother's like, if she's miscarrying and she's upset, like obviously, like, you know, it just blows my mind.
Right.
I don't even have the words. And part of it is just because I'm trying to tiptoe around because, like, I don't want to get into pro-life, pro-choice discussion.
Right.
Because that's not
what
we're talking about. It blows my mind that, like, you're losing a baby and then somebody comes in and says,
your body is aborting the baby.
Yeah. It just says, like, such a clinical, it blows my mind. I just can't.
Right.
I don't have words. Okay.
So no, so after that, I did sign on with this new doctor and she was very amazing.
So she's not the one that you wanted to throw a punch.
Oh my God. That was a different doctor. Someday we'll discuss the OBGYN that got you through your pregnancy too. But she encouraged me to try the IUI. Mm-hmm. And so with doing that, I did the Clomid. And so I'm coming out of this miscarriage. And right away we jump into doing this. We started feeding my body some hormones. And then every month going through the process of the IUI, and every month it didn't take. We did this for about 6 months and I finally broke down and I just cried my eyes out because she said, "Well, the next step is IVF. At the time I was working myself, and if... for Dan's insurance, if I have insurance, I have to take my insurance. His insurance just can't cover me." So I think that's where a lot of them are. So, but his insurance covers IVF. And at that time where I was working, they did not. My understanding that's changed. But so that wasn't an option for us because IVF is expensive.
Great.
So I was like, I'm done. I can't do this medication anymore.
Yeah.
I can't go through this heartbreak of knowing that my body is just failing me every month. I mean, it sent me into depression. I had to go on medication for several months after, just because I was like, I had to just determine in my head that it wasn't going to happen for us. Mm-hmm. I accepted it at that point. And it was hard.
Yeah.
It was very hard. I was just like, well, because you figure 2011, starting to go into 2012. I'm 35 at this point, and the 35 going on 36. And I'm just like, it's just, it doesn't make sense at this point. Well, a couple years later, I got fired from my job because I did something stupid. And we were one day out in our yard gardening, because at this point now I'm on Dan's insurance.
Yeah.
And Dan says, hey, I think we should just give it a go. I think we should give IVF a go. And I'll be crude. I'll actually say what he said. He says, I think we should just go balls to the wall and do that. And mind you, it had taken me a long time to just settle in my heart that this is just the way we were going to, this is the way our life was going to be. And so I said to him, I'm like, look, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it. I'm not going to do this wishy-washy. Oh, well, I've looked at everything and heard everything now. And I'm like, if you're saying you want to do this,
you're going to get my hopes up.
Right. We're doing it. So sure enough, we go to the doctor and she tells us our options. You know, I did like the preliminary testing, blood work, and I had to do, I can't remember the name of the test, but where they inject dyes into your uterus to make sure there's no blockages and stuff. And she comes back and she says, we really do recommend IVF because of your age. You hear this a lot once you're over 35. Because of your age.
Thanks, guys.
I'm not that old. I know when I was 15, I thought it was, but I'm not. So, but she said, because at that point I was 39. She's, because of your age, we do recommend IVF. You know, here's what it can do for you, but here's all the negatives. And Dan, as if you've listened to our previous podcast, Dan will take like all the negatives and be like,
she said you're going to die. Like, did you not listen? She said you were going to die.
And I was just like, oh my God, Dan, I'm not going to back off from this now. We're in this. We're in this 100%. We're going to do it. You said balls to the wall. Here I am with my balls to the wall. We're going to do this. And so he like, okay. So we did the medication to do the egg retrieval, and that went really well. And then we did what they call a fresh, we had, I think it was like 7 eggs that actually processed, and 4 of them were AB quality, which they say are the good ones.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean like there could be birth defects with CD quality. It just means that the chance of the egg deteriorating before it plants is different. So another education point. But so we did 2 of them, and it was the fresh, because we just did the embryo retrieval and the insemination. So they did that, and it came back like almost immediately with like super high numbers. They're like, yay, this is, and I knew, I had read all up on IVF. I knew that there are people that do IVF for years and still get nothing from it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, thanks, God. Thank you. It wasn't all peaches and roses. So
with that in mind, I think that we should wait until next time to finish off your story.
I think so, because I'm really interested to hear about yours as well.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's still some more stuff there, and I don't want to speed through it.
Right.
So,
she's cutting me off.
I am cutting her off. So what we're going to do is we're going to go into our recommendations, and then we will finish up this next time. So we will be right back. So let's get into our recommendations. Why don't you go first?
All right. So some people are going to probably think this is super lame, but
she forewarned me before we started. She's like, you're going to think I'm really lame.
She promised she wouldn't say lame. She would just roll her eyes. So we have a hamster. When we first got it, was not super excited about the hamster because I know the work that goes into keeping one. But I was kind of offended at how antisocial this hamster was. Like, when I had hamsters when I was young, like, I would take my hamsters out and they would like stay right next to me. I could pet them. I could hold them, love them. It was just, I mean, they were my friends. And so I was like, you know what? And Dan's like, well, I read some of them are, most hamsters are antisocial, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm going to make this hamster my friend. And so I have been working on making her my friend. So our yard, we do not treat our yard. So our yard is full of dandelions.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I was looking at them the other day and I was like, I wonder if we can feed these to Spot. Yes, our hamster's name is Spot. is she? So we looked it up and sure enough, we could. So yesterday I went out and I picked up a couple of, well, Joe picked up the dandelions for her. And I went to her cage and I called her, you know, we have our language. And
you speak to her, she ignores you.
Right. But she didn't come out. So Joe got tired of waiting and he just dropped the flower in the cage. Well, when I went in later, I saw that it was gone, but she was up. And so I'm like, you know what? I really want to see how she reacts to this because it is it's fresh, right?
Yeah.
And so I gave her a dandelion. And normally, like if we give her like fresh apples or something like that, she'll gently kind of chew on it and then just kind of gently pull it away from you. That little hamster snatched that dandelion out of my hand. I mean, snatched it. Like, I felt the jerk come. I was just like, I get it. I'm with you. We're friends, right? But no, just like, she sat there. Normally, like, if we give her the treats and stuff, she'll stick it in her little pouches and then go squirrel it away somewhere. But she sat there and ate the whole thing. So I just...
And you were like, listen, these are for me.
Right.
They're my...
You see who's giving these to you, right? I researched it for you. Nobody else. So no, that's my recommendation. I know it sounds kind of lame, but try something new with your pets, I guess.
That is a good recommendation.
Because she was so excited. I mean, like, she hungry chocolate snatched that from me. Or let me put it all for my carb fans. She hungry snatched that piece of bread out of my hands. I mean, just...
Yeah, I could eat up some bread always.
So that's my recommendation. How about yours? Yours is probably going to be way cooler.
No, it's just kind of funny because like last time we talked about gardening and I was just like, I would never do that. But the thing is like we let John do terrariums.
Okay.
Which
is fun.
Yeah, he loves doing them. So basically like a terrarium is like... growing a plant inside a jar and it's like creating a whole like
ecosystem
inside of a jar complete with dirt and stones and water and blah blah blah. And John, who's really like artsy and he's really into like rocks and flowers and all things that I have no interest in.
Right.
He really enjoys doing things like geraniums. And he actually got one as a Christmas present. Maybe last year or the year before. I don't know. It's so hard because like last year to me is just like...
It has blurred into everything else. I don't even know if
it existed.
Right. Was it just a bad dream?
Right. But he like loves doing them, and he loves just like watching things grow. And he's even down to sitting there while we read the 10-page brochure to him about like why each layer is important and what each layer offers and blah, 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 blah. By we, I mean Mike, because I'm not sitting there reading 10 pages of science. But it's the only class in school that I like struggled with hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
Because like there's no like black and white answer.
Right.
And it's not artistic. Because like I was really good at English because like I can write you a paper to save a life. Like I'm mm-hmm. super good at writing. But like applying a thing that you learned to understand the scientific no. So to me, a terrarium is just like you're pouring some dirt in a jar. Like, I don't understand. I'll do it with you because I love you.
Right.
But yeah, so there's a couple different terrariums that we've actually done. But the one that I'm recommending is a succulent planter because succulents actually last the longest.
Yes.
With lower maintenance.
Yes.
Which is all about my life.
Right, right. Yeah, they definitely do not require a lot of water, sunshine, all of that. So,
and it's like a month and you're like, huh, I haven't watered that cactus. I should probably do that.
I agree.
So yeah, that's my recommendation.
I love it.
Do a terrarium.
Yay.
Which is funny because it's basically gardening in a jar. You don't have to weed it though.
So right,
that's
right.
That's the difference.
Thank you for joining us for the Messy Bun Mamas podcast. If you can't wait to talk to us more, then hit us up on social media. We are on Pinterest, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Messy Bun Mamas podcast.
You can also reach out to us on our website at www.messybunmamaspodcast.com or email us at messybunmamaspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.
I am Messy Bun Mamas.
This is Messy Bun Mamas Podcast.
This is Messy Poop.
Messy Buns, you silly.